You're listening to Marketplace Weekend. I'm David Lazarus, in for Lizzie O'Leary. We've been talking about all kinds of cycles, work, financial, tech. It's about time we addressed the two-wheel variety, bicycles.
Bicycle, bicycle.
That's become easier to do in more and more places thanks to bike share programs. But can they work everywhere? Martha Roskowski is Vice President of Community Innovation at the national nonprofit People for Bikes. So for the uninitiated, what's a bike share program all about?
Bike share systems are publicly shared bicycles in communities across the country, around the world. Generally, there are stations. You'll find stations where you can go check out a bike either for a day or you can have a monthly or annual membership. You go up, you take a bike, you ride it wherever you want, you check it in to that station or another station when you're done with that ride. The idea of it is that you use the bike just for a trip. It keeps the bikes in circulation. You ride a bike and then within half an hour or with some systems within an hour, you dock that bike, you go in, you do your shopping, you get your coffee, you do whatever else. You come back out, you check out another bike and you can go to another destination. So the whole idea is that these bikes are available and they're regularly turned over so that many, many people can use them.
It sounds expensive to get one of these programs up and running. Is this something that a municipality funds, or is this something that requires corporate underwriting, or both?
Both, generally. You know, the perhaps most famous system of all in Paris, Vélib, sort of the granddaddy system, is underwritten by a big advertising company called JC Deco, and it was a trade. JC Deco put in and operates the bike share system in return for doing billboards and public advertising in Paris. So that was one of the original models. Now, in the United States, it's a variety of things. Often cities are coming up with public money, either local money or perhaps federal money for the initial capital. And then they are working with sponsors like Citibank in New York, like Independence Blue Cross in Philadelphia, Barclays in London, to cover part of the operating costs. And then you pay to use the system. Like all public transit systems, I don't think the user fees are ever going to fully cover the cost of all of it, like buses where, you know, the fare box, what people pay doesn't cover the cost of it. That's where the sponsorships come in.
So are bike share programs looked at as an adjunct to public transportation, that this is going to be a part of the larger equation of getting people out of their cars?
Absolutely. There are systems in small cities like Boulder, in bigger places, and a lot of the users are locals who use it as a way to get to transit. You know, first mile, last mile. It makes transit work better. It also helps when transit is overcrowded. You know, during peak hour times, people can hop on a bike share instead. So it improves the reliability of all of these systems. I would say the other big piece of bike share use that we're seeing, though, is just for recreation, just for fun. People wanting to be healthy, tourists traveling around town, checking out their city. So it's really both.
In New York and elsewhere, it can cost over $100 a year to join a bike share program. And at that kind of money, you can go out and buy yourself a pretty good used bike. How do you make these programs more accessible and more affordable for people who would love to be a part of them?
Philadelphia is doing some really interesting work. They're going to launch their bike share system on April 23rd. And after doing a lot of focus groups with folks in disadvantaged communities, they decided not to do an annual membership, that was just too big a chunk of money for someone on a fixed income to come up with. And instead, people said, let us pay for this like we pay for transit. Let us do a day pass or a single ride pass, or let us do a monthly pass. So Philadelphia will not even be doing an annual pass. $10 for a month is a lot easier a bite than $100 for a year, or, you know, that kind of thing. So I think increasingly the system operators are listening to their potential users and figuring out how to make pricing of bike share look more like pricing of other things that people are already comfortable with and familiar with.
Do you think pay-as-you-go is going to become the industry standard?
I think either pay-as-you-go or short-term, like monthly, so that people can decide from month to month if they want to re-up their subscription. Or ideally, your transit pass will also operate as your bike share pass, so that you don't have to have four different cards in your wallet and flip through and, you know, make them all work.
Has your polling showed that people who get into and enjoy a bike share program eventually end up buying their own bike and biking more in their spare time?
Yes, the kind of initial survey work shows that. We have anecdotal evidence, stories from bike shops who tell us about people who got on a bike for the first time in 20 years because a friend said, hey, look, let's hop on this because it's so easily available. And then they rode it and they had a great time. And then they're going into bike shops and then buying a bike later on. Bike shops in some areas have been hesitant about bike share coming in, thinking it's going to replace their business. But I would say in general, once the systems are on the ground, bike shops and others are seeing that it's actually augmenting their business. That once you get back on a bike, you think, wow, this is fun. And maybe I need my own bike.
Martha Roskowski is Vice President of Local Innovation at the Colorado nonprofit People for Bikes. Martha, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.